I'm at Charlie Makush's place, and I've been wondering where his family comes from. Makush is not very German, which is the kind of name you get around this area. So, Charlie, tell me, where does your family come from?
Well, Scotland, actually. There were a few Scottish settlers around this area, including the Makushes and the Morrisons and Scots and Leslies, those type of people. My grandfather came to Australia in 1853 from Isle of Harris in Scotland, and he worked on sheep stations throughout the Western District of Victoria for some time, gradually working closer to Nadimuck when land was thrown open for settlement in the early 1870s. He arrived here at Glenmore in 1873 and selected 320 acres, which is still in the family name, plus a few other acres have been added over the years. So that's about the story of where we came from.
Basically, you're one of the original settlers, pretty much.
Yes, yeah, on the creek. The German descendants were originally the first settlers in the Nadimuck area, and gradually worked along the creek. We came in a little bit later than the German settlers. But yes, that's correct.
Has the farm always been here? As in, there must be another homestead on this farm, because the house that you live in now is pretty new. Is it still up?
Yeah, well, look, my mother always told me that there were several houses on the property. Right from my grandfather's day, there was mud brick places built here, but they fell down over the years. I think this would be about the fourth house that was built on the property.
So all the other ones have gone, have they?
Oh, well and truly. I can still remember as a kid the remains of the mud brick home, which was just to the south of this one, to the southeast actually. Just a few old mud bricks and walls and straw and one thing and another and chimney and that was left there, but it all fell down, was eventually moved out of the road, so yes.
And did you grow up in this house that we're in now?
Yes, I was born in this house 81 years ago. yes, that's right, I was born here and I've been here apart from when we moved to Nadimuck in 1950 after my father's death in 1945. My mother battled on here on the farm for a few years and we appointed a farm manager, Mr. Tom Scott, who saved the day for us, and we moved to Nadimuck. We bought a house in Nadimuck and went to school in there at the state school, and later, 2 or 3 years later, we went to secondary school, the three Makush kids in Horsham, and after I'd left school at about, I think it was age 16, I worked on various farms in the area and did odd jobs, painting and one thing and another, and in about 1959, work was getting a bit scarce in the area, like farm work, and I was offered a job painting in Stawell. So I accepted that. My half-brother was a butcher in Stawell, and he said, you better come down, it's a good job. So I went down, I stuck there for quite some time and eventually married a Stawell girl, my present wife, Glenys. And we moved back here in 1961, I think it was, yeah. And of course the old home here was in a hell of a mess and hadn't been lived in for some time, and I went about restoring it to livable condition, and I can tell you it's been a lifetime job. But we made it, and we reared our family here, and we were always quite happy, and yeah.
Fantastic. Now, you said that you're 81, and you talked to me about a week ago about a very special club in Nadimuck. Yes, do you remember?
That was... That took place some years ago now at the Summerfield home in Nadimuck, and there was quite a few of us that were born in the year 1938. I think about a dozen actually, So we decided to get together at Alan Summerfield's house, Alan and Judy's house, for a meeting. And we had a great evening. We had supper and a few beers and one thing and another and a great yarn. And ever since then, we've met on different occasions, regular occasions, if we can do it. And the last time we met at the hotel for lunch. And Judy and Alan came up from Beaufort and we had a very good get-together that day. So that's the 1938ers. There's quite a few of us in Nadimuck. We've been going well. I just forget how long it was since we commenced, but it'd be quite a few years, I think, 10, 12 years perhaps. And in that time, we've only lost one member that I know of.
It was obviously a good year, 1938.
Well, it must have been a good vintage.
You have been quite involved in celebrating the history of Nadimuck too, haven't you?
In 1972, was it? Back to committee, I was on that. I've just been starting the book, actually. And yeah, I was on that committee, and that was very enjoyable. We had, I think the meetings went every fortnight for nearly 12 months. So we covered a lot of ground, and we published the book, Nadimuck, the First 100 Years, which was very interesting and full of information regarding the town. But since then, I really haven't been involved very much in the history of the town. People ask me different things, and I was always one. My mother was a great historian, and she told me things about what happened, you know, on farms along the creek and where she worked and all the things in Nadimuck when she was a young girl. And I've never forgotten a lot of those things, and that's why people say to me, oh, you must have a terrific memory, to, you know. But I said, it all goes back to my mother. She taught me all these things, and I've never forgotten them, actually, a lot of them. And it's always been very interesting to discuss them with people.
Anything springs to mind?
Over the years, there was tales about the old hotel in Nadimuck. David Kitching's lives there now. And there was a lot of stories about that. My mother could, she related stories. They were very funny. There was one occasion, there was a couple of jokers in Nadimuck that loved a beer, and it was summertime, and the bottled beer was hot, so they took they bought the bottles in the bar, and they took them out the back of the hotel and put them in the horse trough in the water. And of course, my mother and her friend Eileen watched them, and they thought they'd play a joke on them, so they stole the beer and hid it somewhere else. And the jokers came around. They were pretty tiddly by then, being in the bar for a few hours, and the beer was gone. Well, you should have heard the uproar. I reckon you could hear it all over the town. There was another one about the policeman, Charlie Ivey. He was here many years ago. I don't remember him. I remember his son, but he was a policeman here too. There'd be duck shooting, and of course duck shooting in those days was a very big event of the year. There'd be shooters come from all over the place, and of course there was plenty of water in those days. Swamps and lakes and things were full. And Charlie Ivey used to go around to the different places and say, well, I wanted two or three ducks off you and you and so and so, and for the Nadimuck Hospital. Anyway, it was found out later that it wasn't for the Nadimuck Hospital at all. It was his own cooking pot. Not a very good lawman.
What about your stories? What do you remember from your life that stayed with you?
Oh, a story like living out here on the farm in my early days as a child. As I said, my father died in 1945, and I was only seven, being the eldest of the family. Isabel, my sister, was six, and Angus was about four or five, I think. And it was quite a struggle here in those days to make ends meet. And my half-brother, Kevin Homden, was only 11 months older than me, 11 years older than me, sorry. And he managed the farm as well as he could, but things were getting, more than he could handle, and it became necessary to put on a farm manager, as I said, Mr. Tom Scott, who lived down the Creek a little way. During the early years, I can remember my father vividly with the horse team and carting hay and one thing or another on the farm, shearing and sowing crops. He died, of course, and we put on share farmers, which lasted a couple of years, and then, of course, the farm manager came along, and he was a great help to us, taught us a lot as kids, and one thing he did teach us was how to trap rabbits. He was an expert at trapping rabbits, Tom Scott was. He could set down 24 traps of an evening, and he'd usually catch 24 rabbits next morning. In those days, rabbit skins were a shilling each, and we thought, well, we'll have a go at my sister Isabel and I thought we'll have a go at this rabbit trapping. So Tom Scott lent us some traps and about a dozen or ten or a dozen, and I'm blowed if we could catch ten or a dozen rabbits. He showed us a few finer points, and I think we got six or seven at a time, but they were well worth catching in those days, and we'd skin them and sell the skins in Horsham, I think it was, or we did have an agent in Nanaimo, but I think they ended up in Horsham. And we made a little bit of pocket money that way, but and of course they were great things to eat in those days because food was scarce, the war had just ended, and things were rationed, and most farming families always had rabbit on the menu, whether it was stewed, fricasseed, fried or curried or what have you. And that's why I don't eat rabbit today.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And how did you get around in those days?
Well, mainly by horse and cart, horse and buggy. There were cars. We did have a car, but it wasn't a very good one. It was an old 1926 Rugby, which was very good in the wet weather, but being light and had big high wheels. We relied on the horse and buggy mainly. My mother handled the horse and buggy quite well. We used to go to Nanaimo once a week in the horse and buggy and park it at my grandmother's place, my mother's mother, and do our shopping and come home. And in later years, we used a hire car, which was based at Vic Hoof's garage in Nanaimo. A driver would come out, I think it was once a fortnight, and pick us up and return us home for 10 shillings. But getting back to roads in those days were very bad, they were non-existent actually. The road was from Nanaimo out here, out this way, was it went as far as Werner's property, which is now where Purse Dickerson lives. And then it petered out into just a dirt track, which in the winter time was virtually impassable with a car, unless you had a Dodge 4 or Rugby or a Chev, which was light. But the big heavy Dodge sedan would become hopelessly bogged and we'd all have to get out and push to get the thing moving again. But it wasn't until the school, the Lower North School, which was just down the track here a bit, was opened in 1945, I think it was. It was built by labour from the district, and I remember them carting timber from Carpalac Sawmill for the building of the school. Tom Gust, I think, was one of the builders. And yes, well, the road had to be formed up then because we had a school teacher that had to get to school somehow. And sometimes he lived a little way away, boarding with other people, and the road was formed up to a standard where it had a gradient on it, and it would run the water off instead of lying in the one place and becoming potholey and boggy. It took quite a while. It was mainly done by farmers with their own machines. I think we did hire a grader, which was pulled by an old tractor and was manually operated by two large wheels on top of the thing, which altered the cut of the blade. I can remember that quite well, and an old stump jump plough, I think, came from here, which ploughed up the road to start with before the formation. I don't remember any gravel or anything like that going on the road for some years, which was it was all up the natty muck end, the best part of the road, because there was more people living in that area. But roads were a main drawback of living out here, because when it was wet or the creek flooded, you're just impossible to get anywhere.
What did you do for entertainment when you were stuck at home?
Oh, well, as I said, we trapped rabbits and we did all sorts of things. We built huts along the creek and underground huts and grew onions and goodness knows what else. And we always had neighbours visit, and which was quite good. I remember going to school down here at Lowen North during the winter time. We'd usually walk to school and home again, and it'd be raining one day and quite solidly, and our neighbour Bill Morrison from down south a bit, he'd come home from Natty Muck in his horse and cart, and he'd wait there in the pouring rain to give us kids a ride home. And being a bachelor, of course, he'd stop here for tea then, and it'd be great yarns being told and, you know, this and that. And there was a regular dance, I think, held down in the school about every month or so, and that was quite a draw card, and the old-time music and one thing and another. And then there was a church service held in the school. I don't know how often that was, perhaps every fortnight, I think, by the Salvation Army. The captain of the Salvation Army had come out to the school and conduct the service, and I think most of the farmers and everyone around here attended, which was quite good. They either played a cornet or a concertina to lead the singing, which I was fascinated with this cornet. And I suppose that was one of the things that drew me to brass bands in the finish. But that's another story, of course. But other entertainment, we used to go spotlighting. Later days, of course, it was shooting rabbits, but that was further down the track. There was always something to do. We made our own fun, our own entertainment, and we survived. Yeah.
So the brass band, another story. Let's hear about that one.
Yeah, well, that's the brass band in Natty Muck was reformed after several years' recess. It was reformed in 1947 by late Bill Schmidt, who was the bandmaster for about 25 years. And when we moved to Natty Muck in 1952, I still had this cornet in my mind that the Salvation Army captain used to play, and Bill Schmidt seemed to know that I was a bit keen, so he came along one day and he said to Mum, he said, "I think it's about time the young fella joined the band." So, all right. So I went to Bill Schmidt's office after school one day, and he gave me this instrument. It was a baritone, a larger instrument than a cornet. He said, "Take that home, laddie, and see what you can do with it. And I'll see you here next week after school, perhaps Friday evening or something like that." And that's how I joined the band, and that was about 67 years ago. And I'm playing the double B bass now, which is the biggest instrument in the band. But so I've stuck with the band. I've always liked music, particularly band music and classical music to a certain extent, country and western. But you grow out of country and western after a while. But today it's a completely different country and western to what it was in our day. It's not the good old songs that we used to sing. But yeah, the band has been probably my greatest form of entertainment or sport or whatever you like to call it. I've never played physical sport in my life except for a little stint at school now and again.
And farming.
And farming, of course. I think I've got enough exercise lumping bags of fertiliser and seed grain around without having to do anything else. But at 81, I think I'm doing as well as a lot of people that have played sport and ended up with severe injuries and what have you. I might be wrong, I don't know. But yes, so the brass band has been my main thing.
You must be the oldest continuing member in the band.
I don't know about that. Rob Smith, Bill Smith's son, he's been retired now for about 3 or 4 years. He'd probably be a bit longer than me, I think. But I wouldn't be far off. But that's nothing. That's not an achievement. It's just because I love the game. But we're all very keen bandsmen in Nattymuck. The main problem with the band today is to attract players, particularly young players. A lot of us now in our 80s, so we're not far off it, and it's becoming a bit of a struggle, but we keep going as long as we can. Mm.
Would you have any word of advice for people out there as to what makes a good life?
Oh, well, I think you've got to grow up. Take notice of what your parents say. I think I didn't take enough notice of my mother. I tried, but I did the best I could, I suppose. But I think you've got to be respectable to your parents. You've got to have a certain amount of discipline. Another thing, when we went to move from here, from the farm to Nattymuck, the first thing was join the band, and I also joined the Boy Scouts. And when we went to secondary school, I joined the cadet unit. And that taught me a hell of a lot in respecting people and accepting discipline, which is pretty hard for young people today. They laugh it off and think it's a bit of a joke, but it's not. And you must respect people, you must have respect for other people. And you must control yourself if possible. It's hard to do on the footy field. You see people get out of control. But anyway, that's a different thing. But yeah, I think you've just got to go along with things. Listen to other people's point of view. Don't be overpowering in what you think all the time. When it comes to politics and things like that, keep your trap shut until you know what's going on. I think health-wise, I suppose, don't smoke if you can get out of it. I did smoke. I smoked for 10 years, and it was knocking me about something terribly, and the doctor said, I think you better stop that. He said, otherwise you won't be around for much longer. So that was the end of the smoking, and I wouldn't advise any young person today to take up smoking. It's not a very nice thing to do. Have a beer. A few beers won't hurt anyone, but anything in moderation is okay. The way you were brought up and that sort of thing, and can have a lot to do with how you end up, I suppose. But as I said, my father died when I was 7. Well, I actually had no one to look up to as a father. During that time, there was particularly out here when there was the likes of Tom Scott, as I said, who taught us a lot. An old bush carpenter called Charlie Treadwell was very, very good. He was as good as any school teacher. He spent quite a few months here building and renovating things in the late 1940s, and he'd help us kids with our homework, and we used to have the best results in the school because this teacher off couldn't work it out how we used to do this until they found out about our other teacher. But he was very good. And of course, when we moved to Nattymuck, there was other people like Bill Smith, the bandmaster, and people like him, other farmers that I'd worked with over the years, the Ubergang brothers, the Sudolses, all very good people to work for, and that's where I learnt what I know about farming.
Anything else that you would like to say as a parting comment?
Oh, I don't know, Brigitte. Oh, I think farmers today, well, you'd know yourself that farms have got a lot bigger now, and a lot of people along the creek here, they've sold their land and it's been bought out by other farmers, and they've formed bigger farms and work as a family business, which is probably good in one way, but you lose your neighbours, like... For instance, all the Sudolse boys are gone now that live down along the creek there, and of course their descendants are still here, but it's less people. We had great neighbours years ago along the creek, we still have today, but more so then because they stuck together more, there was more time to enjoy with each other, and the likes of the Werner family, which... were very good neighbours to us, and of course the Sudolses were too, and the Gusts, they're all gone now, and that farm has been absorbed by other farmers around the district. Sid Gust was a councillor in the old Rapture, and he was responsible for getting one of the people that was responsible for getting the Lower North School built. And also, he did a lot of work in getting the road out this way as well.
So less people living in the countryside makes it more lonely as a farmer now?
Well, I don't know about lonely. I think they're that damn busy they haven't got time to be lonely. Yeah, I've got to talk to some of the blokes around here. They're flat out all the time, and there's always something to do on a farm, so with handling bigger acreages and... things like that. It's very time consuming, and if you've no sooner finished harvest and it's time to spray and it's time to pickle the grain and things like that, and do burning and what have you. But I think most farmers get away for at least a fortnight after harvest, which is a great thing because it's a big strain. Farming today because of the worry, I suppose, more than anything, the weather, the climate change, if there's such a thing, I don't know, but rain is what it all revolves around. If we don't get the rain, the whole thing goes down the gurgler. But they're all battling through, and I think most farmers around here are doing quite well at the moment. Last season wasn't very good season in places, but was very good in others. So it's just a luck of the draw, I suppose. Mm.
I think it's also very important to do what you love, and farming is a bit of a vacation in a way, isn't it? I mean, you might inherit the farm from your parents, but it doesn't mean that you stay on the land.
No, well, that's right. And when you said that, it's I know my mother's sister, she lived in Melbourne, and she used to come up here now and again with her two children. And she said, look, Ollie, I think you should pack up and sell the farm and go to Melbourne and live, because there's nothing here for the kids, and it'll be years before they're old enough to operate the farm and things like that. But it got very close. It got very close. I shouldn't be sitting here by rights in this kitchen, but all those years later. But only for Tom Scott, we probably would have, because... he was a saviour. He came up here one day in 1948. It was a winter's day. I can still remember it. He used to work at Jewel Panja Station further west. And he'd finished work there, and he moved back to the old home on the creek down there. And he said, well, Ollie, he said, that was my mother's name, was Olive. And he said, well, Ollie, what's going to happen to the place? And she said, well, Tom, I don't know. She said, I'm thinking about Myrtle, my sister, wants me to move to Melbourne with the family. Tom said, no. He said, don't do that. Don't do that, for God's sake. He said, stop here for the kids' sake. And she must have thought about it and pulled the pin on the Melbourne move. So That's why we're still here. It was very close, I can tell you, if Tom hadn't have came along. But he was here from 15 years, I think he spent here as manager before Angus and I were old enough to take the farm over, which was, we both had to be 21, I think, according to my father's wishes. Mm-hmm. And he was actually a saviour of the farm and our country life, I suppose.
Well, it's amazing where life takes you. And what
it is, it certainly is. But, we had great neighbours. I was saying before, Keith Sudol's known as Sam. He was a great neighbour. You might remember Sam Sudol, so I don't know. He used to be a real character, and he always used to come up here to have Christmas dinner with us, and we'd have a great time. The kids were only small then, and he'd bring presents and all the rest of it, you know. And we'd have a great old time on Christmas Day. But they're all gone now, and as I said, the Morrisons, there's another family that have disappeared. They've gone, and the place has been bought out and is now leased. And the Hammonds were great neighbours further over on the creek. Stan and Olive Hammond were great neighbours, and I remember Isabel and I, when the milking cow here was dry, Mother would send us up the creek with a large quart bottle to fetch milk from the Hammond dairy. They milked quite a few cows in those days, and we'd walk the 3 km up there and back. We were only small, you know, about five or six or something like that, and think nothing of it. But so that was great memories. Yeah, and the Keat family, of course, they've gone from up east of here. They sold out and went to Horsham, and that farm has been absorbed by other farmers, and there's another family gone. So, but I suppose there's always grandkids and things like that coming along to replace the ones that go, but it's a long process, and whether they'll be farmers or not is a different thing. I know my family, my great-grandson, Charlie, well, they're doing their best they can to make him a farmer. I think they'll have a win too, the way it's going. But some kids are just not interested in farming, and they've got to leave the district for education reasons and to get a job. And if they go to Melbourne, well, it's usually where they stay. And come back now and again, but still the farm's not the draw card that they want.
Speaking of draw cards, you're 81 now, you've lived here all your life. You don't feel like moving to town?
No, definitely not. People say to me, what are you still living out on the farm, Charlie? God, why don't you get into Horsham and get with it? I said, God's truth, I'd die if I had to live in Horsham. And I've got interests here on the farm. I've got my workshop up there, and I do a bit of restoring. I'm restoring an old tractor at the moment, which is coming along nicely. I do a bit of furniture restoring, which I'll show you there, and things like that. I find there's plenty to do around the place, keep things clean and tidy and mow the grass. There's always something to be done that I can hop in and have a go at. But no, I think they'll cart me out of even a box probably. But whenever that happens, well, so it be. But no, I'm happy here. And my wife Glenys, of course, is in permanent care at Natty Mark at Triscothic, at the nursing home, and she's loves that in there, and she's doing very well. So it's only a close, she's very close. You can only jump in the car and go in there and see her anytime you like, so it's quite okay. Family are all nearby. Wendy's in Horsham, that's our youngest daughter. She's the furthest away, but Rhonda's only over at Mitre, and Chas a bit further on. So I'm quite happy here.
I can see that. Thank you very much for your time. It's been an honour and a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Bridget.